all the missionaries gathered in Thailand, and we're having talks about one thing or another that we're applying to all of us in the Southeast Asian context. And I was caught by one of our very liberal, probably one of the most liberal American Baptist missionaries I know of, socially speaking, politically speaking, even theologically speaking. And she was telling me something that I just could not wrap my head around. She was a missionary in rural Cambodia. There you know who I'm talking about. She came over to our house one time in Dayton, and she says, "Oh, you have walnut trees, great." And she went out to the yard and started hulling the walnuts and soaking them in water. She said, "I need to worm myself." This is this kind of person. Very earthy. Knows how to do everything, medicine yourself kind of a person. She was a doctor. And but they were doing medical mission work in Cambodia. And she was explaining to me at this conference when she grabbed my arm that she wanted to tell me an experience about something that happened to her and she thought I would understand of the other missionaries in the room. And it was a story about her participating in an exorcism in a rural village in Cambodia. There was a person in the village who was not responding to psychological or medical treatment. And so, against her better understanding, her scientific Western understanding, she participated in this ritual to expel this evil spirit from the person, and the person felt relief afterwards. And it's interesting, I was reading this book by John Dominic Crossan a couple of years ago. Many of you have probably read it called Jesus, a Revolutionary Biography, and he has a whole section in here in the middle called In the Beginning Was the Body. And he talks about the body and the ancient Near East. And what he says here is kind of instructive in a way. He refers to studies by Erica Bergignon, sounds like a French name, doesn't it? Who actually was a scholar at Ohio State University and worked with the National Institute of Mental Health and wrote a very important study on altered states of consciousness caused culturally. And basically argued that cross-culturally, there's a thing that we all participate in, and that is, since we're very complex people, we have the ability to have participated in altered states of consciousness, in trance. And in very many cultures, trance is ritually controlled, and it's used medicinally as a healing, as a part of healing in the culture. And so, she writes, it must be accepted as a human universal, another gift of neurobiological evolution. A possibility open like language to each and every human being, but also like language, its actualization is specified by psychosocial patterning, by cultural training, control, and expectation. So a little child who grew up in Portugal will, in language, speak Portuguese with local accents, and will, in trance, see the Virgin Mary in blue and white robes. They will not see the god Krishna or the prophet Muhammad. And then he goes on to talk about another study that was done by a person named Lewis in the 70s called Ecstatic Religion, an Anthropological Study of Spirit Possession and Shamanism. And in this study, it was argued that in the ancient Near East, you have, and in really any group of people that are experiencing colonial possession, you have an outside stressor that is causing intense conflict within a person and a sense of powerlessness. And very often, if there's already a belief in the culture that there are evil spirits present, a person will, as a way of controlling their surroundings, sort of as a, what's the word we use for this? A coping mechanism. As a coping mechanism, will define that stressor as an evil spirit within them. And he says, every time you turn a page in the New Testament and the Gospels, it seems like Jesus is casting out devils. Why is that? And his suggestion is that because people in an oppressive situation in which they're extremely stressed will sometimes use the understanding they have about the way spirits work in the world as coping mechanisms and will become demon possessed. And the only way to get rid of that is to speak in the language they know how to speak, which is to expel what what it is that's causing them distress. And it's interesting and helpful for me to see that as something that Jesus is doing. I have no presumption that Jesus was external to his culture. I'm sure that Jesus probably had the same cultural predispositions of anybody else living in the ancient Near East. But something interesting in the story is that Jesus was one of these people, shamanistically, who would go around and say, be free. You don't need to be controlled by your control mechanism. This is really the root of the story for me, because I think so many times, even in the modern era, in a society like ours in which we don't have those kind of control mechanisms, we still have to admit that there are a lot of us and a lot of people we know who, experiencing the tremendous stressors in their lives, respond to them in not healthy ways. They respond to them with control mechanisms sometimes, coping mechanisms or defense mechanisms that are unhealthy. And the good news I'm reading out of this story today, you may read other good news, is that there is hope. You can be free from those. How many of you, if I were to name a few coping mechanisms, you could probably think of many, many more. But think in our culture of alcoholism, how difficult a problem that is for people. And given the stressors in people's lives, sometimes it's a way of retreat. I can handle it because of this. And in that situation, a person will react in ways that they wouldn't normally react in, and they will feel that they are themselves when they're in that situation. In the same way that this person, he looks at Jesus and says, are you here to destroy us? There's a blending of the problem and the person in a way that makes it difficult to extricate the real person. Think about other coping mechanisms we have, like denial or repression or projection. And when we're using those coping mechanisms, we don't see them as problems within ourselves. We're only experiencing them at the time as ourselves. And it's only when someone says, be free, maybe that's not who you are, that we have the possibility of opening ourselves to a life without that coping mechanism. What are some other things that you think sometimes could be coping mechanisms which people use to kind of deal with the stressors that are around them? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Eating.
Eating, right? What else?
Sleeping.
Anger.
Escape.
Sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Overworking, workaholism, right?
Spending money,
yeah, let's spend it away.
Planning.
Perfectionism.
Violence.
Sports culture.
Psychosis.
Mm-hmm. So we think that these problems of the ancient Near East that are so awkward and displaced from our experience are not something that we actually deal with. But in a very real way, there are a lot of people around us. A lot of times we ourselves find ourselves trapped in the situation which we feel like we're really not ourselves, or other people look at us and say, you're not yourself. But we maybe can't even see it at that time, because there's something that needs to be moved out, gotten rid of, so that we can come back to who we truly are. And the good news of the passage today is that even though there's a resistance to the parting of that mechanism, right? Jesus comes and says, starts preaching in the synagogue, and this person says, hey, wait a minute, you have come to destroy us. You have come to get rid of my coping mechanism. It's a fearful thing because we depend on it. Jesus says, be free. You can be free. Tomorrow can be a day not like today. The self that you live this day doesn't doesn't have to be the self you lived yesterday. And that's a message that's still very powerful for us. Because we do have the freedom to be different. And sometimes people forget that. And when they forget that, they feel trapped and powerless. And the cycle just continues and sometimes spirals down. So as good news people, I think it's, even though we want to be very rationalistic and realistic when we're dealing with people about the time it might take to be free, we still always have to hold the hope out. You can be free. And I was talking to a friend of mine who was an alcoholic for a long, long time, and still considers himself an alcoholic, goes to AA meetings, about what a relief it was to simply be able to see himself for the first time. You know, sometimes we hear about in AA meetings, people say, I'm so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic. And we don't think how important that statement is. But the statement, I see myself now, is the first step in being free. Let's think about that and be in prayer for people who need to be free around the world just for a minute as a reflection today. Oh God, it's difficult to know ourselves. Difficult for others to know themselves. May we rest in the assurance that there is that which in us, that within us that is free, that is pure, that is unharmed. And may we live in that self, and may we wish that for all others.